My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello there, everyone. Welcome to our first race review of the season. 2013 is up and running, and so are we, properly now. It's like we're getting them under our belts. Australia, Melbourne, Kimi, hey. Joining me around a lovely glass table this week, which hopefully will make our permanent home, got Dave Tillier here.
Evening.
There he is. It is evening, isn't it? It's late. Should be in bed.
Miserable outside.
Perry Hamilton's alongside us as well.
Always.
As always.
As always, Michael. Pleasure to be here.
Good to see you, Squire. And joining us for the first time, EDP F1 debut, Jack Phillips. Jack, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Great to have you as part of the podcast crew. We'll obviously be having all kinds of people, some willing, some not, in the F1 pod over the season, which is already 1/19th of the way through. Yeah? Mm. We're cracking on in a blur of waiting for the rain to fall.
What's that in percentages?
He hasn't prepared that. Come on, let's not play silly games.
If only we had a Formula One engineer to tell me off the top of their head what the deal was. Kimi Raikkonen won in Melbourne. A cracking way to start for the Hethel-backed Lotus team, ultimately based in Enstone. We're not naive. We know how it works.
Maybe we should call them the Hethel-originated.
We could do.
Because they did start up here. They've got the Norfolk DNA.
They have got the Norfolk DNA. Although I think they were originally in London when Colin Chapman actually set them up.
So yeah.
We don't.
Details,
no one,
details,
no one bothers with that.
Been here for long enough.
Yeah.
I'm from London originally, but I consider myself to be a Norfolk person now. I've been here for 21 years.
I'll call you Norwich-backed David Tilly. Yeah. Brilliant. That's the way. Kimi wins. Lotus shine on a rain and all kinds of things hit Australian Grand Prix weekend. How much do we read? We read into that. Is this the year that Kimi and Lotus challenge return to the top?
It could be. It's hard to say because Melbourne isn't exactly the best barometer for sort of judging who is the quickest and who's got the best car, because it is very much unlike a lot of the circuits that we race on throughout the year. But they clearly have moved the game on a little bit from where they were last year. They've still got a car that's great on their tyres, and it looks pretty quick.
It does, indeed. I suppose it's all still a little bit unpredictable. Red Bull lockout for the grid, wasn't it, Jack? I mean, it all got a bit ominous. I could only see Sebastian Vettel just disappearing at the lights and that being that.
Yeah, but then the tyre issues appeared kind of out of the blue. But then also being stuck behind Sutil could have exacerbated that a little bit. But with Malaysia coming up next, they've got some possibly big questions to ask themselves and of their car as well. So it might not be as click as it appeared, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It was interesting how shredded the Red Bull's tyres were. They just weren't managing them. Is that because there wasn't the setup time? I mean, practice and qualifying were obviously torn apart by the British weather that inflicted Melbourne for a few hours.
No, I think, I mean, this is a Formula One team, you know, they've got scenarios for every single end result. So, you know, they could have run things. Yeah, maybe a little bit of more running in the dry would have been nice. But at the same time, I think it's just the surface that you have at Albert Park. I think just the way that is, you know, half a street circuit, half a racing circuit, doesn't get used all year, takes a long time to rubber in, and, you know, and especially after being washed completely green after the qualifying sessions. I think you're going to have more cars suffering than doing well. Would have been different if it had been a dry qualifying. Of course it would. But I don't think it's necessarily anything to do with the setup. I think it's just a general feel that most of the paddock probably had a harder time on the tyres. And especially those that had to qualified on the super soft and had to start the race on them.
Yeah.
You know, and it was, you could see the tyres just fall apart.
It's amazing the shredding and the marbles that those tyres were creating. Mm. It was like they were just driving on a grater. Interesting that Romain Grosjean was quite a way off Kimi's pace during the race. He picked up one point, bookended the other end of the points, if you like. How much of that is about Kimi? And is there a difference in... I know we're obviously analysing one race compared to a full year last year, but He was racy, wasn't he, Kimmy? There was a spark about how he was going about it.
Well, I think it shows that I was right from the last build.
We're not laughing. We're not going to laugh at that.
I think, it was a little bit odd, actually, I have to say. I mean, like I say, from the last pod, I did say that they shouldn't have signed Grosjean, and I still stand by that.
My man to watch, I think, if I remember rightly. but anyway, carry on.
But he is fast. I have no doubt that he's got the speed, but for some reason it was just lacking.
I think he's driving his mirrors, isn't he? Mm. He's looking for the trouble, and then isn't able to look forwards in a way. So I personally agree. I wouldn't have kept him on. I think there's better options among the grid and outside the grid.
Well, I'll split the difference there, and I'll agree with you, Michael. I actually think he's a solid investment, and I think that maybe he just needed this one race, incident-free, get the points, fairly clean race, get the experience, get to feel the car in anger, see what happens for the rest of the season. But I just think getting that one race under your belt completely incident-free for the chap who had the amount of run-ins and trouble that he had last year could be an absolute treat for him.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I hope that is the case, because I want to see the Lotus team as a whole do well. You know, I'd love to see them get as high up the championship from a constructor's point of view as possible. And if Grosjean can bang in some points or even some wins, that would be fantastic. I'm just not wholly sure that it will happen.
I agree with Jack, you're saying about him being wary of what's going on around him, and I had kind of hoped we'd have been over that, but I suppose he has to be cautious initially, maybe heading into the first race. We'll see how it develops over the coming races. Clearly, Kimi, though, having the edge and a real genuine pace to him. Behind him, of course, Fernando Alonso and Sebastian Vettel. Now, there's some ridiculous statistic, I think, that like 70% of the recent seasons, the winner of the championship has been on the podium in the first race or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the stat was, but basically those three people, one of those is going to end up, is most likely to walk away with the championship at the end of the year, 19, 18 races later. Anyone disagree that we've probably seen the winner on the podium?
No, I don't disagree, but at the same time, I mean, just add what, Jenson Button to that mix? And I would have said, if you'd have asked me pre-season to pick three or four guys who could win the championship this year, I'd have picked those three or four guys. You know, it's not a shocker if you'd seen...
And the top three last year.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And if you'd seen someone, I don't know, like Webber up there, or if, Sutil had managed to stick it out and get a podium at that point, I wouldn't be sitting here going, Sutil's a dark horse for the championship. You know, it doesn't work that way. We've seen these guys consistently perform, and Kimi, I think, what's that number of consecutive race finishes for him now? And you know, it's just incredible. Consistency is the word, and if you can put in, we were talking about it towards the end of last season with Kimi, you know, is he going to mount the late charge? Well, actually, if you've got Fernando winning a race and then dropping out, and then winning a race and dropping out, to have that just points, consistent points and consistent podiums, you can mount a challenge anywhere. But I would say it's going to be one of those three guys anyway. I mean, maybe Button, if McLaren look a little less sorry than they did this weekend. They've got some work to do.
Sign a new car, maybe. We'll get on to them in a bit.
But yeah,
we could definitely say Raikkonen is currently in the best position to win the World Championship.
Nothing, David. That's the way. Bring it down to the practical ways and rules. I love it. A word, though, for Ferrari. Obviously, they've got a much better starting point to what they had last year, Jack. And it looks like Fernando may have a proper rival, teammate.
I personally can't see past Alonso this season. And with Massa now in the points regularly, I think it cuts out so much of the midfield sort of scrapping for points. There is now just one point effectively on offer now for the midfield because of Massa, because of Mercedes. I think he won't be anything more than a rear gunner for Alonso. No matter what happens this season, I think he's nothing more than their number two. He's a very good number two. He's their new Rubens.
Exactly. In the preview podcast last week, I think we all said we backed Fernando to win the driver's title. So we'll see how that pans out. Good signs from Massa, though. He's exactly how he finished last year.
Yeah, I have to say, the first part of the race especially, you know, Alonso clearly showed that he wanted to get past, but Massa was just, nope, I'm going to stick with it. It's unfortunate for Massa, I think, that Ferrari switched them onto a strategy that forced them to swap places.
Yeah, what happened there? Is that down to... it seemed like they were letting Massa do his own thing, and then somehow the strategy in the pit stops. All of a sudden, Massa found himself fourth when he was running second.
Yeah, you could probably talk for hours about conspiracy theories and how Ferrari probably wanted to get Alonso out in front. And you kind of have to think, well, that's probably the best bet from their point of view. If they're being, you know, realistic, they want to get a man to win the World Championship. They want Alonso to have most of the points because he statistically shows that he's more likely to be able to deliver. But I just think it was they didn't have mirrored strategies. They had very different strategies. Unfortunately, one worked and one didn't. But I'm not going to go as far as to say that it was a conspiracy against Massa at this point.
Well, it's not a conspiracy, full stop, because conspiracy would mean that it was going on behind closed doors and everyone was arranged against him. I think open about it. You know, it is, as you say, Jack, he is a number two. He's the rear gunner. That's his job. And if he went into this race thinking that given the opportunity with him leading the race and Alonso behind him, if anything other than pull over and let Fernando pass was going to come through that radio, he's kidding himself. You know, as much as he may not like it, and sometimes you get the feeling that Rob Smedley doesn't like it, that Smed doesn't like having to tell him to get out of the way, because, you know, they've obviously got a very close relationship and they've worked together for years. But it's, you know, Massa has to understand, and he has to know that. And he said last year, you know, you're lucky to have a teammate as good as me. You know, they're very hard to find. And I think so. And I think it may get to the point, if he remains as strong throughout the rest of the season as he has this race, I think next year Ferrari could have some serious contenders for his services.
And not only that, he would, if you suggest he leaves or left, I would imagine it would be with a driver constructor's title in the bag, the way that those two are going. Very strong pairing.
Okay, I'm sure we've all missed these. These are the EDP F1 pit stops. Okay then, gents, we'll keep it short and sweet. That might be quite difficult for this first one. I've got here written down McLaren. Wow. Where to start, DT? Jenson Button, your man to watch in Australia, the man on form.
Didn't he do well?
I think a Button win was your prediction.
This
suddenly came from nowhere. They seem to be going really well in testing. There were maybe a few rumblings after the last test, but
they on the first day of testing they pulled out a lap time that everyone said was amazingly fast, and I thought brilliant, and then they were rubbish, and then the last little bit they looked okay, which is kind of probably it's not a very good description of their testing thing, but that's kind of roughly how it went from my perspective. So yes, we knew that they were going to be off the pace, but I thought, well, it's Melbourne isn't really. It's a different track, so, you know, the McLarens always go well there, Jensen always goes well there. So even though they might not have the fastest car, I thought they might be able to pull something out of it, but no. They were so far off the pace.
And this is like a couple of years ago, isn't it, where they had the same car, and they you know, Woking can turn around these cars, but you're already ruling them out of the championship pretty much, aren't you, if it takes, you know, 5-6 rounds to sort it out.
Well, that's it. I mean, teams start so fast, drivers start so fast. I think last year we talked about it on the preview podcasts, you know, a week ago. Yes, we could in theory see 7 different winners again, and parity has come back to F1, and that's what makes it exciting. But you've got to bear in mind, last year was the anomaly. You know, until that happens again, that's the exception that proves the rule. I'm not expecting to have 7 different winners in 7 different races. I'm expecting someone to build a solid championship lead going forward, because that's just the way of the sport. And if it takes you 3 races to get back into the swing of things, then you're always going to be chasing. You know, if you come in 3rd, not a problem, but if you're coming in 9th and you're already 23 points, someone will turn around and go, oh, but that's just one win. But if it happens 3 times in a row, that's a lot more than just one win. So yeah, I mean, yes, we know they can turn a car around, but you've then got to have the drivers to be able to do it. We know Jensen's one of them. We don't know that much about whether Perez can handle it or not. He looked a little bit lost, a little bit out of place. But again, maybe like I mentioned with Grosjean, he just needs that little bit of time to get the car under him and be secure in it. And maybe that's what will happen.
Perez arrived at McLaren expecting to be in a car that will be challenging at the top, so it might be a bit of a rude awakening for him. I know Martin Whitmarsh was asked whether it was just a setup issue or a genuinely inherent tricky car. And he said, yeah, it's a tricky car.
Yeah, I think they will be there at the end of the season. Lotus haven't got the money or resources to continue developing their car as much as they would want, especially 2014 being so big a step forwards. But then with the first day of testing, they said this week they had the suspension on or a component backwards, which was the issue.
Wow.
And it was a lower ride height, which I think they're just going to chase to replicate that lower ride height now. And you can't really blame them because it was so good, that lap. I think with Malaysia's weather, it should level the benefit a little bit, and I think they should then be able to catch up again, and I don't see any problem with
really?
Button, I don't
yeah.
think.
Hmm.
I think you'll be there.
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, it smacks of 2009
yeah.
McLaren, because they came out of the blocks 2009 with a dog of a car.
Yeah,
Hamilton still won races in that season, so...
Well, we'll see. I mean, it must be said, Ferrari's car last year was a pretty, it was a shocker out of the box, and they won in Malaysia.
Mm.
And that was, of course, where everyone heads next. Caterham. Hingham-backed Caterham, as we so eloquently call them. They are behind Marussia, and there is only one team that now doesn't appear on the constructors' graphic, and that could possibly be Caterham for most of the season at this rate.
Caterham are going to have to change their name, I think, because it'll be Caterham and then brackets, the new HRT, close brackets.
OK. Catchy.
Yeah. it's not got a certain ring to it.
Right, they are. HR2.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. We got there in the end.
There you are.
Is there much to say about them? I mean, Marussia appeared to have overtaken them. Jules Bianchi, has to be said, had an excellent debut, showed mm-hmm. some real genuine pace, and... Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was impressed overall with the driver. Most of the rookies that came out, you know, they can only drive what they've got. And in the case of Caterham, they haven't got a lot. Unfortunately, that is the case. But maybe if they drive well, what I think of what the two people, you know, what the drivers for the back markers are thinking at this point is, I'm new into the sport. If I drive well enough, maybe I'll catch the eye and I'll do a Sergio Perez and jump up and jump up and jump up. And I think that's what they're trying to do. I don't think anyone has any... dreams of winning any kind of title, let alone race, in a Caterham or a Marussia at the moment, unless they lie in bed at night going, rain at Monaco, rain at Monaco.
I think we might need more than that.
Well, exactly. You know, you'd need a massive, massive...
I mean, they've effectively turned up with last year's car, pretty much. I mean, they say that they're going to have updates come Barcelona, but so are the other 10 teams. So
lesser driving pairing as well, in my opinion.
Hugely.
I wouldn't be surprised if, say, 2-3 years' time... they just pull the plug with their Alpine link up. Le Mans might be a better option for them as a technology company, I guess, because Caterham being the bottom isn't going to help anyone.
QPR's relegation from the Premier League might not help either, but that's probably for another podcast. Force India. Now, they had a good weekend. Mm. Adrian Sutil, especially, leading his... I couldn't believe that. I'd assumed he'd led a Grand Prix before, but first time he'd led a Grand Prix, am I right? And Paul De Resta seemed a little bit... not annoyed, necessarily, but he wanted to make the point that he was told not to overtake Sutil in the last few laps because he felt he had the pace to take him.
Mm. No, I think I'm really, really impressed with both Force India and Sutil. I think he led not only on strategy, but on merit. And it's just unfortunate that they had to switch so early, or they chose to switch so early on to the super softs at the end, because he had no pace. If they'd have left it a little bit longer, I think maybe he could have maybe held out a little bit longer. But no, that car looks fundamentally looks quite good. It seems to be good on its tyres. It's not a rapid car, but it seems to be quite good. And you know, obviously, having seen it firsthand, I actually knew it was going to be a great car.
Oh, so. Of course you did. Yes. It got the David Tillier seal of approval
indeed,
at Silverstone.
Indeed,
that's pretty much.
Even though I couldn't see it when it was actually launched up until about 5 minutes after, because the Sky F1 crew were in the way.
I'm pretty sure Sutil credited you
name
with
dropping, isn't he? Sky F1 crew rubbing shoulders with
exactly.
the greats.
I think Sutil mentioned something about that in his post-race interview. I think they may have just cut it
out of
the coverage. I can't remember.
I was going to say, did Johnny Herbert not say that I nearly met him?
yeah, that got cut as well, I think. Lewis, Mercedes, bit of pace. Lewis, I liked what Lewis did. I thought he gave everything out of that, got everything out of the car he probably could have done.
Yeah, I mean, as those keen-eared listeners will remember, Lewis was my pick to both put it on pole and take the checkered flag. Looking at the way the Mercedes performed over the weekend, I don't think that was a bad shout at all. I loved the grit that he showed. I loved the commitment that he showed. And I think
I think just a few teething problems. You hear him on the radio, you know, you need to tell me more, what's my pace like?
And you can tell he's learned, they're trying to learn each other, the team,
what they like. Because I mean, Kimi doesn't want to be told anything. Hamilton needs constant updates. It's, you just need to learn about the driver. And I think that over time, you know, they'll show the car is quick, the car's competitive, and you know, I think they've got a race winner on them.
They started quite well last year, Mercedes, but they did drop off horribly. can you see that being different with Lewis this year?
Yeah, I think as a whole, it's going to be, this car's going to be much better, I think, in terms of staying at the front. I think they can be disappointed with the result. I think the pace was obviously there, and the strategy didn't work. Lewis crashing down the inside of Alonso, I thought that was needless myself.
Where he locked up, is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think he could have maybe... It might have compromised him a little bit. I might be wrong, but personally, I didn't see any reason for him to do that. No. He just black spotted, and he had to pit that lap then. So I think they're disappointed.
Another four or five laps, I think they thought it cost him. On the same tyres. Nico Hülkenberg, I've just got here a little mention. First race for it in a Sauber, didn't get going.
It's unfortunate for him. Yeah, very unfortunate. It would have been interesting to see what he could do in the Sauber. I don't think the Sauber looks quite as quick as we thought it might have been, unfortunately. But
difficult to tell, I suppose.
It's hard to say at the moment, with Gutierrez being quite inexperienced. At least he brought it home, I suppose that's the main thing.
Yep, indeed. Good on him, because he has been known to have the odd smash or two. So.
Well, he got very... He personally introduced himself to the wall in qualifying, didn't he?
He did, indeed.
Managed to dizzy himself up a bit there, but...
Some of his exploits in GP2 last year were something to behold. I'm sure they're on YouTube somewhere. Okay then, gentlemen, the big moment. Driver, team, highlight of the week. One of each. I'm going to start with Ped.
Hello. Driver, it's got to be Sutil. I mean, you know, I don't know many people that... I mean, you know me, when it comes to these things, I always try and avoid going for like the top guy who won or anything like that, unless it was a particularly spectacular drive. I always like to try and give it to one of the sort of slightly lower down teams. But I mean, we've been talking ever since we've been doing this podcast about how we expect Force India to be taking that step forward, and they haven't. And I think whether it's indicative of what's going to happen for the rest of the year or not, I think certainly in Australia they took that step forward and they showed that they can be competitive. So I'd give it to Sutil and Force India for team as well. Force India almost talked their way out of it with messing up and putting him on the super soft so early. I mean, I know he had to run it, but I just think there was another way they could have done it, because those tyres just hit the cliff, and they hit the cliff quick as well. So I think maybe something to do with his setup wasn't friendly to them. Oddly enough, I think Jack and I disagree on this, because my highlight was Hamilton defending so hard in a car that really he had no right defending in. And I agree with you on that it was maybe the foolish thing to do, but for me it was just... a lot's been made about, you know, the Lewis Hamilton move, and we've talked about it previously, and for me that was him on track basically saying, you give me the car and I'll give you everything. And I think just in that one move, that was what he was saying. So for me, I was just like, yeah, go on, okay. But there were a number of occasions when I just remember sitting there, and I was on my own watching the race, and I just remember going, that is great stuff. But, you know, there's so many of them. It was just, for me, it was a really enjoyable race. And there were a lot of moments where I just sat, I said out loud, that's brilliant. Yeah. That's good stuff. That, well done, sir. Well played.
It was good with Lewis, because I think it was both, really. You sat there going, go on, Lewis, yeah, fight. Brilliant. Look at the way he's trying to hold him off. And then you went, oh, actually, that was really stupid.
Yeah, what an idiot.
So I think it worked both ways, really. Jack, we'll come to you. Driver, team, highlight of the week.
Driver, I think Gutierrez deserves a mention, because to outpace Bottas as the best rookie, I was expecting Gutierrez to be languishing amongst Marussia and Caterham. But I think Kimi, everything worked so well for Kimi. He made the strategy work, he had the pace when he needed it, made his tyres work perfectly.
Brilliant.
And when
start,
you compare Grosjean 80 seconds down the road, I think that adds a bit of perspective to how good Kimi was.
Absolutely.
Almost enough time for Kimi to eat a whole Magnum, isn't it? 80 seconds, so he can chew his way through that.
Indeed.
And then team, I think Force India, being so well up in the points and comfortably in the points, I was expecting them to be 13th at best all season, really. So then, with the rest of being so close as well, the PR stepped in a little bit to keep Sutil in front. And then I think Sutil leading would be my moment, because he had so many doubters, people were saying how good Bianchi should be there, and I've always liked Sutil ever since Raikkonen took him out of Monaco, I think. So I think it sort of vindicated the decision to keep him. So I think the laps he led and Force India in general, I think, were the best.
Yeah, it was good to see him. It was good to see him back, actually. Sutil is another, you know, it helps when you not to miss people like Kobayashi and things like that, I think, with the way he races. But David?
Well, if I were to overlook Sutil and Raikkonen for driver of the weekend, I'd probably have to say my driver of the weekend goes to Hamilton. For two reasons. One, that he was, I thought, absolutely brilliant in qualifying, and I thought he was very, very good in the race, and he's kind of the Lewis that we love to watch. And also because he's proved myself and a lot of us wrong, because I was very vocal about the fact that I thought it was a really bad decision for him to leave McLaren. But seeing him being interviewed and seeing him on track and seeing that car, he seems happy. He seems content. And that's really nice to see. It's making me like him again. Not that I disliked him before as such, but you know what I mean? It's kind of, you know, I was getting a little bit bored of some of the stuff that was coming out and the way that he was sort of looking a bit moody at races and various things.
Now, you see, it's interesting you say that. I'll just jump in there if I can, HDT, because it's having the opposite effect on me. I saw the interview that he did with Damon Hill on the Sky Sports coverage. Other F1 coverage is available.
Only sometimes. Yeah. But yeah, carry on.
And it got to me, because he was talking, like, he almost started talking about himself in the third person as a human butterfly coming out of a cocoon. I almost expected him to start spouting poetry. And he was saying about how, you know, he's got so much more exciting things going on in his life, and he's not just a racing driver, and now he's set free and he can do what he likes. In all honesty, I turn on to watch him race. I don't turn on to watch him wax lyrical. And he's made his name as a racer, and as a damn good one. And so trying to sort of crowbar in the fact that actually he wants to be an icon and an entertainer, to quote Cam Newton, and if you get that, listeners, I'm very impressed.
Over my head.
An NFL reference. But, you know, to say these things out there, quite obviously, he's got more on his mind than racing. And at the first race of a Formula One season, you should have nothing else on your mind but racing. So for me, it started to kind of grind on me a little bit, you know. But it was his performance on track was outstanding.
Exactly, and I do totally agree with you. For me, it's more kind of like, I kind of tune out that kind of like white noise that unless they're talking about the racing and they're just talking about the Formula One, I don't really listen to what the drivers have to say most of the time. But it's more about his look. And
oh, he's got spring in his step.
He's definitely got spring in his step. Mm. He's smiling again, which is nice to see. And it, you know, I just didn't like the moody kind of sort of spoilt brat-ish Lewis that we saw from time to time, especially last year.
Just wait till he brings out his album. Which that will be be one you'll love, Pedro. Team, David.
Team's a difficult one, because I haven't really got one.
That would make it quite difficult. Yeah.
Just because I can't think of one that I definitely want to give it to. I mean, Force India, they did really, really well. But then again, it was maybe a bit of a bad call, like Ped said. Ferrari, very, very good. Made a big step up. Good points. Lotus won, but where was Grosjean? Red Bull, they got pole, but then they just ate their tyres. McLaren were just awful, so I don't really know who to give it to.
Give it to Marussia then.
Actually, to be fair, Marussia have made a real big step up, and they've, you know, I'm impressed with them. So yeah,
and they don't even have Charles Peake anymore.
No,
DT's resident favourite, isn't it?
He skipped over. Highlight
was the lack of safety cars.
Yeah.
We saw enough of the Mercedes during qualifying, didn't we?
Exactly.
Checking if there was any standing water. Yes, there is still standing water. Ferrari, I would give team two, probably, just on the fact of how they managed Massa and Alonso. And I think they could well be a good bet on the Constructors' Championship. I wouldn't necessarily give driver to Bianchi, but I'm very impressed with the pace he pulled out of Marussia to only finish one lap when the other backmarkers were two laps off the lead lap, which with those two teams is how you have to judge it. Highlight, I think, was Jenson Button coming in after only three laps to change his tyres. That was And his interview talking about it afterwards was quite amusing as well. We're going to wrap it up there for part one, because we're going to be back with part two later in the week. Not much later in the week, admittedly, where we look ahead to Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So, gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Much appreciated. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget edp24.co.uk/F1 for the latest news involving Caterham and Lotus. You can also catch my weekly Eastern Daily Press column on there. And the new Twitter feed at edpf1. You gents are all on Twitter as well, are you not, David?
I am indeed.
Which is?
At Dave Tillier.
And if you can spell it, then you earn the right to follow him. Ped?
At pedhd56.
Brilliant. And Jack?
At jpippin.
Brilliant. Love it. There we go. All right then, we'll be back soon. Thanks for listening and goodbye.